Mike and Vianna, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Vianna, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 8 of Survivor David versus Goliath. Got a lot of stuff to talk about in this very insane tribal council sandwiched within this great episode overall, the great season overall. We got a great panel to break everything down. First, let me bring in the co-owner of the B&B, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm great. I just want to start off with a statistic in that Dan playing the idol for Angelina was the 69th idol play in the history of Survivor.
Nice.
Ooh, yes. That just brings up this episode even more that we got to witness the 69th idol play. Let's put up that plaque, Liana. We've been waiting for it for the three seasons we've been covering the B&B. Let's unveil it.
So happy. I had this printed, a couple years ago, and now we're ready to finally unveil it. I'm just so excited.
And we are so happy to be joined by a viewer, the person who happens to be here on the seminal, momentous occasion, the 69th time that an idol has been played. Someone who has made a big move herself in the past few months, even a bigger move than the David splitting their votes to get out John Hennigan. Alita Brillman, welcome back to the B&B. How you doing?
Thank you. Coming to you live from Washington, D.C., from our nation's capital, where I'm currently just covered in confetti and balloons celebrating the 69th idol play.
Parties around the country. Everyone came together.
I just pulled a string that dropped a trap door of confetti and balloons.
Yeah, it's been up there for, I mean, Liana is a crafty person. She has planned basically every home in America has been filled with confetti and balloons. So apologies to those of you that were surprised by what we unleashed upon idol play number 69, but you know what? We're all in this together. We're a survivor community. Let's celebrate a milestone as one.
It's my magnum opus, guys.
Well, let's get into this episode, because suffice to say, there's a lot to talk about. Before the episode proper, Lita, we haven't heard from you yet this season about your thoughts on David versus Goliath. We're more than halfway through at this point. What are you thinking about it overall?
I'm so underwhelmed. It's so boring and there's no good characters. Can you imagine if I was just like, I don't get the hype? Like,
yeah, it's a real Hawaiian pizza of takes.
Listen, we know that I'm a pineapple pizza stan. I've been vocal about that on Twitter. We're not getting into that discussion here today. So I obviously am loving this season. I'm a little bummed out that I'm not seeing a ton of winner potential for a woman this season, just with the invisibility of Gabby and Allison and Kara lately, and the everything about Angelina. none of it is super screaming winner to me, but there's still so much time for that to turn around. There's many female winners that we didn't see much of until the end of the game. But other than that, I mean, I'm completely loving it. There have been a lot of moments where I'm like, what the fuck is the edit doing right now? And then they really turn it around and they always tie it together, which was not happening in like Ghost Island or HHH, where that truly was just like, what are you doing? Why are you telling this story? I don't care about these people. Show us some of the other people. So I'm just totally all in and really loving in particular the edit right now.
I think I remember a number of things from Ghost Island where they were never followed up on. It was just sort of, it was like this hanging thread of a storyline that was like, wait, I'm sorry, why was I supposed to see this? And I know that Jeff Probst, I think, told Dalton Ross in an interview that they were trying something different with the edit. So, I mean, personally, I think that that's paying off in dividends. Like, I'm really enjoying the season. I think there are a lot of little subtle things that the edit is doing that makes it, you know, so much more fun. And so I don't know how that's going to impact the winner's story. We'll see, I guess, when the whole thing is said and done. But it, you know, it might be somebody unexpected. Or it could be somebody who, you know, we're seeing a lot of, like Nick.
You lost me at I remember a lot of things about Ghost Island, to be completely honest.
What island? I don't know her.
That's the thing. I feel so bad because it was the previous season and I actually really liked the cast. But I will admit offhand, I remember probably 70% of Ghost Island. I know I talked with you about this a few weeks ago, Liana, offline. But like looking at the Wikipedia page, I was like, wait, there were two ties in Ghost Island? I just completely forget about it.
Oh, no. Including the finale or...
Well, I can't tell you the specific events I'm thinking of because I don't remember them, but I remember thinking, why am I being shown this? This doesn't make sense. So, you know, that being said.
Well, getting back into this episode, I would love to. We stumbled upon this metric with the great Jess McKenna last week on the BNB. Can we ascribe a type of soup to this episode? Because I'll throw one out here and let's see if we can dip our collective spoons into it and give it a taste. I'm thinking of some sort of like butternut squash soup with like a little bit of a kick to it, a bit of cayenne at the very end. Because I will say that this episode for me, by and large, I would say it was a pretty good episode, the first like three quarters of it. You know, pretty run-of-the-mill reward challenge. Mike feels left out or wants to sort of make a change in the game, breaks up the strike force. It seems like the noose is really closing in around Christian, but man, it just gives this huge kick at the end with this bananas tribal council where two idols come out and John gets blindsided with only a few votes, something we only heard about in passing with a couple of comments. So it's a viewer blindside as well. So that's probably my choice of soup. Do either one of you have thoughts about that?
I can go with the same theme, and I'll say some matzo ball soup where you have really good self-control and you don't eat the matzo balls until the end.
And then, yeah, right. Because that's the thing, is that it was like all of the excitement really came at the end, because it was like, good episode. And then it was like, oh, my God, what on earth is happening? I need to eat more soup, is what I've learned from this discussion, because I don't know enough about soup to really answer these questions. But
Liana, you sit down in a Hale and Hearty in the next 2 weeks and like just sample and get me one of everything.
Is that like a New York soup restaurant? What is it called?
It is. Yeah. Hale and Hearty.
Oh, are they a sponsor?
They might be now, an unintentional sponsor. I think every time we mention a brand, they're an unintentional sponsor of the B&B.
I don't know. After listening to the show, they won't be. But yes. No, okay. All right. That'll be my homework for the week. To try to eat as much soup as possible.
That sounds like the best homework ever.
It really does.
Well, let's start getting into our usual fare with this podcast and start with our time capsule preseason predictions. And we'll start with Mr. John Hennigan. Lot of interesting stuff about John. I think, at least not to foreshadow my prediction too much, but I think I speak on behalf of a lot of the community when I say that John very much surprised me in how he behaved. We talked about this last week with Jess about how he, ironically enough, was probably the most genuine, like, I wouldn't say sensitive, but, you know, I think authentic person out there, which is very surprising given that he plays a character in the ring 24/7. So Liana, all that being said, what did you think about John preseason?
So I actually had John going pre-jury, just give an idea. John in his bio may have said the word strategy once or twice, and so that might factor into the AI prediction here. Okay, so this is what I wrote. John entered the game wanting to be known for more than just his physique, so he really tried to play strategically. In confessionals, he remarked, "I'm Spanish strategically, and I authentic strategically," because John over nicknames. This type of gameplay led his tribe mates to not only think of him as a physical beast, but also as the mayor of unsolicited strategically. His his closest ally, famous fluent Mike, was helpless as John is voted out of the game as one of the biggest target Survivor has ever seen, literally and figuratively. His closest ally was famous fluent Mike, and his worst enemy was the mayor of Slamtown. So I guess he was like defeated by his alter
that's
ego.
Profound.
He's his own worst enemy.
Yeah,
that's like that Christian Slater show from back in the day. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, much like Dan's big bag that he tattered out preseason. I mean, he's Spanish strategically. Yeah. Is that what he said?
Yeah, I'm Spanish strategically, and I authentic strategically, because John over nicknames, and he is the mayor of unsolicited strategically.
John over nicknames is him versus Nick.
Right.
For all that's true. And also he's, nicknames.
I want to also talk about famous fluent Mike.
Because call you that from now on?
He is. Yeah, you could call it double FM. He is famous and he's fluent in a language because he's a writer. Yeah, so I guess that's
strategically.
that's really intriguing to me that he does wrestle in Mexico. So maybe that's what he means. Like, oh, I'm strategically Spanish in order to, ingratiate myself in the Spanish community.
Yeah, I guess so. Also, Mike White speaks in emoji. So there's that also. Right. So he's bilingual. I don't know, but a lot of strategically. So that's all I got.
Which is ironic considering that I think even John told me this in his exit interview that he didn't feel like he was playing strategically. So I guess it just goes to show how like your preseason strategy and your actual strategy on the season just goes completely out the window into the strategic Spanish square. So I had a bit of higher prospects for Mr. Hennigan, Morrison, Abraham Lincoln, etc. I had him making the jury. I did say he would be the clown of the season. I said, despite not winning any individual challenges, everyone pegs him as the biggest physical threat. I said that people will search through his big bag to try to find an idol. I guess he talked with Josh about having a big bag for some reason, and I glommed onto that. And I said that despite losing, he'll still get a Survivor-themed belt made, which has yet to be seen. I said his closest ally would be Dan. Mm-hmm. And I said that his worst enemy would not be himself. It would be Dr. Allison.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, that's got a lot of merit. Obviously, you were closer in the fact that you actually had him making jury. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's always interesting to me when the big guys are like, oh, they're a threat. They're going to be a physical threat. And then, they never win any individual immunity challenges. I mean, he only competed in two, so we didn't really get a good view of that. But he didn't win either of those. So,
yeah, it's the James Clement rule, right? That like appearances are deceiving, especially when it comes to these first couple of individual immunity challenges, which are much more like dexterity and hand-eye coordination based instead of like, hey, hold this big weight above your head like the reward challenge was.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lita, it is your choice. Who do you think had the more accurate preseason prediction for the Man of a Million Nicknames, even though he does not like nicknames? He's over them.
I mean, how could anything be more accurate than being strategically Spanish and famous fluent Mike, his best ally?
Obviously.
I have to go with Liana here.
Hooray!
I think we all won, though, because I got a nickname out of this. So
that's right. Joined by my co-host, famous fluent Mike.
Though I'm not very fluent in the English language, which is shown by just the number of times I misuse words. So maybe it's a bit of a misnomer.
Right. But see, that's what makes it clever, right?
It's an ironic nickname because I'm not famous and I'm not fluent. So it's a double negative.
See? So smart.
Yeah, well, I'd love to just get, before we move on from John, I would love to get both of your thoughts just about him in general, because specifically his Ponderosa. I know everyone was sort of touting this out as like one of the better Ponderosa videos they've seen. And yeah, it's so genuine. It's, again, insane that this is a guy who's the American luchador, recorded a song called Welcome to Slam Town, shows so much bravado on a daily basis that he's like tearing up talking about like, I set up walls as a person and I want to break them down. And we talked about that a bit more in my interview with him, but it just completely surprised me, much like everything in this season.
He authentic. That's what I learned from him. And he just, there was something so enjoyable about him. And he grew on me for sure. I mean, as soon as I was like a professional wrestler on the show, like, oh boy, we're in for it. But then as I got to know him, I fell in love. John Morrison, if he ever wants to hang out, like, I'm definitely down. He had a quote from this episode that was, they were talking about, I think it was, you get
getting
what you
boned.
Give, right? Yeah. If you give to the wrong person, then you're boned. I'm putting that on my quote board. It's just genius.
Well, the ironic thing is on the 69th idol play, John got boned.
He got boned. Poetic justice?
Maybe. I suppose so.
I don't know.
Famously fluent justice. Right. Lita, what are your thoughts towards John Hannigan?
Yeah, so I think that for John, I was nervous to stan him for a while because like male professional athlete is like not a person that I usually get behind. And for me, like, I'm always team like my faves over everything, over strategy or whatever. And so I was like, I don't know if this is a person that like I would really enjoy in real life. However, partway through the season, I got on pretty good authority that John is a woke legend. And I proceeded to stan immediately and unwaveringly. So very sad to see him go, but happy it was in such a terrific way.
You don't give him the woke legend nickname, though. He's over nicknames.
The mayor of woke, mayor of woke legends.
Yeah, that doesn't have much of a ring to it as Slamtown. And speaking of Slamtown, actually, we have a nice treat for you. Now, a few weeks back, the great Edwin Johnson sent us to the start of the often mentioned slam poetry subsidiary of Slamtown. Edwin Johnson sent us a slam poem about Slamtown. And in honor of the mayor vacating his post this week via the 69th idol play, Edwin decided to pen another poem for us. And I'm going to play that for you right now. So enjoy the mellifluous tones of the B&B's resonant slam poet, Edwin Johnson.
Hey everyone, this poem is very near dear to my heart. It's titled Election Season. The votes are in. There's a new mayor in town. Can't touch Christian, so pass the crown. Idols were used and some electioneering. This Davy Band wagon has power steering. Nick and Davy, they call themselves dicks. Thick as gravy and twirling sticks. THICC. New Slammy Sosa, Davy, take the reins. At Ponderosa, John gets plenty of gains. He's been voted out, idol slammed. He can now pig out Russell Hammed. Your tribe might have a frickin' muckraker. Poor Goliaths, you're the victims of a Rickenback breaker. Thank you for listening.
And thank you again so much, Edwin, for that piece of, I'll throw it out there, poetic beauty.
Snaps.
Might not be too lofty of a term. Yeah, I mean, I'm also for him accompanying himself. That is extremely hard to do, but he was, he got the snaps in there intermittently.
That's beautiful. Oh my gosh, that's so good. I love it. Take that wand off.
Yeah, we got the Semhoff going on. I mean, there's some legitimately good like stanzas in there. You know, the bandwagon, Davy's bandwagon with power steering. But I think the piece de resistance is Rick and Backbreaker.
Yeah, no, that's just clever writing right there.
I can't get over the Semhoff.
Thanks to the great Dees Goulish for sending us the name. And hopefully, even though John's gone, send us any slam poems you may have that inspire you over the course of this season. Lita, do you have any questions or observations about this episode or the season at large that you'd like to present to us before we move on into the fun and games of it all?
Well, it's a really important question. I have been thinking about, you know, if John is the mayor of Slamtown, I was thinking, what are some other survivor contestants throughout history the mayor of? Like, Dr. Sean from Borneo is obviously the mayor of Alphabet City.
Of course.
And I just think that there's a lot of opportunity here to have some local elections for past survivors that are mayors.
Ooh, okay, this is a good one. All right, let me think. Well, of course, Chaos Cast. Is there like a chaos? Town,
Chaos City.
Well, we know that Eric Reichenbach is from Hell, Michigan. So I feel like you can just say that your least favorite contestant, like Shannon Elkins, is the mayor of Hell.
Doesn't Keith live
in Keithville?
Yeah, he lives in Keithville. So obviously Keith is the mayor of Keithville. I mean, that's just written in the name.
Do you want to know?
It sounds like it's the least creative. Like, Keith, you're the mayor of Keithville, I guess.
1,000%. When I was a kid playing SimCity, Leonaville was the name of every single town because that's the extent of my creativity.
Here's how sad my survivor nerddom is. It took me like a full 5 seconds after you said Keith to realize that you weren't talking about Keith Famey.
Wow, you're old school. You're thinking back to the Mitchell Olson I Will Survive parody that we talked about last week.
Keith Famey is a legend.
Well, I think Keith could be the mayor of like Burnt Rice City or something like that.
It has a good ring to it.
Yeah, it really does. I think that I'm thinking about like alliteration or rhyming assonance with Slam Town. Like Wanasher can be the mayor of Jam Town. Stacey Powell can be the mayor of Blam Town.
Jeffra Blamstown.
Jeffra Blandtown is a good one. I mean, Coach can just be like president of his own country, whatever, like Coach Tania. He just sort of like I feel like it wasn't there that thing where like there's this little like settlement nestled within the country. I think it's called like Malasia or something, that one guy has sort of ceded from the country to form his own nation. Like, I feel like Coach can do that.
Or Stephanie LaGrossa.
Yeah, that's true. Actually,
in the city of one.
The main export is a filet mignon pizza.
Yes, it is.
Wait, what's this place called?
Malasia, I believe. Molossia, I think.
Malasia. All right, hold on. What? Oh, yeah, it's a sovereign independent nation within the territory of the United States.
Where is it?
Is it just like a, it's in Nevada.
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's headquartered at his home. It's founded by Kevin Baugh and headquartered at his home near Dayton, Nevada.
Yeah, okay. Can I become a citizen? You can't.
Was this like an FAQ?
Yeah, FAQ about Malasia. You can't. Full residency in Malasia is a requirement of citizenship. So you have to move there. I don't know if you...
So
can
have to
visit.
Move in with him?
I guess. You just move in with this one random guy?
He's what's the name of the woman who lives in the medium place?
Oh, yeah. I feel like that you have to like live with them. And he might actually have the same. He might have Cannonball Run 2000 on VHS as well. But this makes me think, can we form like the B&B Burb? Like, can we personally file to become our own nation?
Absolutely. And we totally should.
Is that the FAQ, Liana? How do I do this?
Yeah, right. Well, how do I Google starting own nation? You know what, though? It's probably going to end up being more work than it's worth, you know? But it's truly a third world nation is what it says on their FAQ, which I don't know if something is you want to say. For example, we don't have paved roads, a hospital, or an airport. The president prefers to spend the government's money on bettering the nation as a whole rather than on a grand mansion. Other nations might learn from this.
Oh my God.
Might.
That's
oh my God. I am so sick of these selfish cities with hospitals and airports.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. You gotta, use your budget on something good like a Nintendo Switch.
How dare they? Also, one of the FAQ questions says, is your snow real? And the answer is yes, it's real and cold. And wet. We get it several times during the winter.
What does that make different from it? Like, were they asking that because they thought he was like an indoor ski slope, like creating fake snow with soap flakes?
I have no idea. Like, he's in his own biodome, just sort of living out in Malasia.
That also completely sounds like he is protesting too much. But that's exactly what someone whose snow is fake would say. Yeah, it's real and it's like cold
and it's like wet.
Yeah, you know, it's snow. Yeah, it's cold and wet. Yeah, you know, like snow.
Like normal snow.
Yeah, you know, like comes from the sky and stuff. You know, like.
Well,
that.
No, I noticed that he did not say it was white. So maybe that's why. Like, maybe it came out like lime green, and people are like, "Is that real snow?" And that had to like that provided the question for the FAQ.
Oh my God. Okay. So they have a page about their government. These are the ministers. Okay. Minister of making things orderly. Minister of making things disorderly. Minister of sand, rocks, and dust storms.
What about
minister? Minister of frugality and minister of ethnic food. And it's the same guy in different costumes.
So this is our group Halloween costume next year, right?
Yeah, so going as all the ministers of Malasia.
Oh, hands down. And then the leader, His Excellency President Grand Admiral Colonel Dr. Kevin Baugh, President of Malasia, Protector of the Nation and Guardian of the People.
Where does he work if he's a doctor and there's no hospitals?
It should be guardian of the person, not the people, because there are no other people there. This is crazy, though, because I think we found a legitimate rival to the mayor of Slamtown. Might be this guy who gave himself like 10,000 nicknames.
Yeah, really? This is fascinating. And they have a really crappy webpage. This is lovely.
Crappier than the Fessy Fitness app?
It's pretty bad.
Have you guys seen Dan from the Season of Survivors website?
Oh my God, yes! Why were we on it the other day? Because
we were talking about the social media from Dan a few weeks back.
Yeah, DanielRendering.com. It is not a well-designed website.
Ugh, this one is worse though. Also, they have a Molossian time capsule which will be opened in 467 days, 16 hours, and 23 minutes.
Wait, it's being opened like next year?
Apparently.
Time capsules are not supposed to last like a few years.
Oh my gosh, yesterday was Utopia Memorial Day. Guys, we missed
what?
Wait, so it's not a utopia anymore? They're memorializing it?
Yeah.
Well, that's are they like, aware.
Well, oh we God. Have to imagine a Utopia Memorial Day, what they let the bees loose. They're kicking, they're stomping the cans like Red did back in Utopia. These are very veiled and very like niche utopia references that I don't know if anyone is getting out there.
You can also buy stamps from them.
They have any other merch? I'd like a hat.
They have salt. They call
I'm sorry.
It
what?
It's called prisoner's salt.
Oh no. What kind of prison colony is Kevin Rob running in Molossia?
This is super weird. Okay, toiling in the happy bowels of the earth, Molossia's political prisoners are gently guided back from their erroneous ways while producing quality salt for tables across our nation. This fine product, renowned for its taste and excellent character, can be used for a variety of purposes, not the least of which is flavoring and preserving food. So you can buy some.
That's like maybe he put his salt around and said it was snow, and that's why people are questioning.
Well,
it.
Speaking of snow, it's sold in little tiny baggies, 2 ounce bag of white
God.
Powder.
So, oh dear God!
I don't know what kind of salt this is.
I think I'm combining like our Survivor and our Molossia interests here. Maybe the penal colony of Molossia has incarcerated all the bitter jurors from all the seasons of Survivor, and that's how they're able to produce so much salt.
That's exactly because they're so salty. That's where you send them all. They all live in Molossia. All right.
Finally, I was wondering where all the Samoa cast went to, and now it finally makes sense.
So this is a Molossia podcast now.
Yeah, Molossia has taken over this podcast now, which is totally fine because I think we've stumbled upon a legitimately interesting, I would call it Americana, but it isn't.
Okay, yeah, okay. So wait, going back to the cast, who would be the Minister of Frugality? What Survivor player would be the Minister of Frugality?
I would say it might be Ty Trang because Ty is very frugal with his idols in Survivor Ko Rong. And so like he's all about like not, you know, being very cheap with his use of advantages.
I think the Hanses are the ministers of making things disorderly.
So then who would make it orderly? Would it be like Betsy from Survivor Samoa, the cop who Russell's like, I got to get rid of her.
Or yeah. It would be Brad Culpepper because he's always decorating and
Minister
making
of decoration.
The camp for I'm trying to think of frugality. Like who is someone who like Lyrsa not wanting them to cook all the eggs.
Or
Sugar being a cookie Nazi at the auction.
Cookie Nazi.
That's the cookie Nazis are actually the direct rivals of the Empire of Molossia. So
oh my God,
we're war with them.
Yeah, we're the salt allies. We got to take down the axis of cookies.
Oh my God, wait, actually they're at war with East Germany.
Germany? What year is it in Molossia?
Maybe the time capsule actually is more pertinent
depending on when they put it away.
I don't know, but you can buy war bonds to help support the war against East Germany. And this is day 12,800 of the war with East Germany.
Is East Germany aware of the war with Molossia?
Yeah, it's a very one side. So. I know I keep making Survivor Samoa references, but they're essentially the Shambo to the Laura Moret that is East Germany.
I was thinking like Thorgy and Bob.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, one doesn't know. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Wow.
It costs $3 if you want to buy the war bond, just FYI.
Oh, that's a what? Bargain.
I know, right?
Gotta get on the ground floor of that one. So yeah, all B&B bucks will be going to the Malasia war bond sometime soon.
We'll probably accept B&B bucks.
Well, when we form B&B Burbia, we'll need to. I don't know who we'll have to bring in some Survivor contestants to grace the presence as well. I mean, maybe Troyzan has been our lawyer for so long. Like, should he serve in some sort of capacity as a minister?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think so. We gotta, you know, we gotta bring back in our regular crew of Survivor characters, and you know, who knows? We just make up titles, obviously, judging on based on Malasia. Yeah, so.
You could do it. What's good for Malasia is good for the B&B.
Okay, this is a great idea. Let's do this.
It's a good rule of thumb. Well, let's get back. Let's move from insanity to insanity here. We spoke about Slam Town. I want to speak about some slams here. In the spirit of Paris or Malasia is burning, the library is open here, folks. For those of you that have no idea what I just meant, we are going to be doing some reads, not Josh's, of these Survivor contestants. Liana and Lita, two of the most prolific readers in the RHAP verse, have come up with some reads for these Survivor David versus Goliath contestants. We'll go back and forth. We'll see if we'll give them some Edwin Johnson-esque snaps as these two don their proper reading glasses to really nail these contestants. Lita, how much did you enjoy getting to write up reads about these groups?
There is one person in particular that I enjoyed specifically getting to read. This cast is, there's a lot of people here, so I didn't write reads for everybody, but this cast was particularly easy to dress down as opposed to Ghost Island, where I only even really knew the names of three people.
Yeah, I don't know. I had fun with some of them. Definitely for others, though, it was a little bit more of a stretch just because I liked them so much. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to get into this.
All right. Well, Liana, let's start with you. Which one are you putting at the top of the order here? Who are you going to read first?
All right. I'll just start with Mike White. Okay. So Mike White has made so many poor decisions on the season. Looking for an idol the first day, flipping on the Strike Force, that fedora. Who knew he would peak in life as a character named Ned Schneebly? Also, Steven, my Casuals Corner correspondent, he sent me somebody called Mike White the Toby Flenderson's long lost brother, which I thought was very apt. So that's another read thrown in there.
I like that. If they ever did a spinoff of The Office with Toby back in the day, I feel like they could have put White. Mike White in as his
hands
brother.
Down.
I like the idea that they're doing an Office spinoff centered around Toby.
The most memorable character.
Yeah, really the Sierra Dawn Thomas of The Office.
He's a game changer for sure. Yeah.
All right, let's go to you, Lita. Who are you going to read first?
I'll stick with Mike. We can just keep this all in these.
Keep it fluid for famous fluent Mike.
Yes. Mike, I can really see why you were put on the Goliath tribe. You're a true titan in your industry. I mean, I looked at your IMDb page and the hits just don't stop. Pitch Perfect 3, The Emoji Movie, a School of Rock TV series. It's no wonder your Survivor game mirrors your career. Tired, irritating, and ultimately completely forgettable.
That's what I'm saying. He peaked his Ned Schneebly.
I mean, he also does look very tired, but I think that's just because he can't really get his eyes open.
Yeah.
Aww. Oh my gosh, that scene of him walking down the beach. It's like, did he edit that himself? What a disaster.
The CBS Survivor-like B-roll had a really good time with this episode.
It feels like it was like it's one of those like inspirational, like he's a motivational speaker who is like, I walked down and the other set of footprints was beside me, but I saw no person next to me. Like, that's what I got.
Well,
with
there's
that
a direct pipeline
spot.
From Survivor contestant to motivational speaker. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's Mike's next move.
Yeah, absolutely. Though I feel like, I don't know, he might be a demotivational speaker. Like, all right, you can do it. I believe in you. Like, he just has a very placid way of speaking.
Yeah, but he's got that T-shirt that says, can't we all just get along?
Maybe at this point, sounds like it looks like can all long, considering how faded it is.
Can all long?
Jeremy.
I didn't mean to ask you.
Can all, Jeremy. True Jeremy. Question.
Hey, Can I still talk for a second briefly while we're talking about Mike, about his talking back to Jeff after the reward challenge?
He was being real mouthy. This is like Penner status.
But like, Jeff's like, I've been waiting for someone to talk back. But like, Jeff, were you really waiting for someone to say that back to you of, oh, we've got nothing for you too? Like, that's not really. Yeah, I think like the bigger thing is, you know, want to know what you're playing for. And everyone says no. Like, that's the much bigger burn.
Didn't that
than,
already
like,
happen? But they edited it out. What season was that?
I think it was something where like there was one season where they were playing for basically, I think the Survivor players bargained up for an improvement in reward. So they essentially did that. I can't remember this season, though. But yeah, that did end up on the cover.
I just always think about Doritos and Mountain Dew as the ultimate, ugh, like, worth playing for. No.
I like it when they like got one chip to taste.
Yes.
Yeah, not unlike the one slice of pizza they all got to, 12 of them got to nibble on.
Oh, yeah, okay. But like one slice of pizza versus one Dorito. Right? I mean, one is better than the other.
All right, let's go back to Liana here. Who are you reading next?
All right, I'll go with Allison. So Dr. Allison, I know she's a doctor, but I think she should diagnose herself because she seems to be suffering from under-the-radar-itis, otherwise known as Purple Syndrome, and cures include being more interesting, having a personality, and contributing to the gameplay.
Ooh.
It's just so sad because I love her. Or we could, this I came up with, we could treat her with an edit pendectomy.
Oh my God.
Or an edit pen.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God.
All right, Lita, what about you?
Amazingly, I don't have a read for Allison. So I'll go to John because we miss him. And I wrote this, I think before the episode even happened. So John, I know you call yourself the George Bushy of Tushy, but to me, you're the Benjamin Harrison of embarrassing or the William Howard Taft of nasty.
Love it. History and poetry combined in one.
Educate them children.
I could have done William Henry Harrison. I just want to make sure everybody knows that I know that there were two presidents named Harrison.
Well, William Henry Harrison also lasted longer during the presidency than John Morrison did in the game.
That's true.
Shots fired. Yeah. Should have worn his coat.
Yeah. Nope. Natalie took it, so he couldn't wear it.
Right.
Natalie, can I have thine jacket?
Thine jacket, for doth will catch Don cold.
What?
I don't know what that was. You know what?
They talked in the 1800s U.S.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know anything about histories.
Oh, yeah. My favorite character from Much Ado About Nothing, Benjamin Harrison.
William Henry Harrison.
Right. Classic. Classic. Okay. All right. I have two. I have two that kind of go back to back. So I'm going to do them both. Okay. So I feel bad for Angelina because she clearly has no idea what show she's on, because I'm pretty sure she thought she was auditioning for the Survivor rendition of Oliver Twist. Lisa, may I have some more jackets? Which actually, Alec, if you're listening, Oliver Twist is a book by Charles Dickens. It's about this orphan boy in a workhouse. You know what? Actually, Mike, can you explain it? Because Alec only understands something if it's explained by a man.
Ooh, bye.
Kaboom.
Love it.
Nice.
Love it.
Double bird. Misogyny.
I can't believe you just ended the patriarchy.
I know, right? It's done now.
It's over.
Yeah, you pulled a Davy. You essentially like cracked it wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If only it was the 69th read.
It might be.
It might be. All right, Lita, what have you got?
Angelina, I am obsessed with you. You represent everything the right currently hates about the Democrats in America. You're a Latina woman who calls out sexism. You're empowered. And between idols and jackets, you're constantly asking for handouts.
I do. You gotta love this. Like, I am so in love with Angelina this season as a character.
Oh,
but you
too.
Have to love this recurring theme, mm-hmm, of her like asking Natalie for a jacket, essentially asking Elizabeth for a jury vote, asking Dan for an idol. It's pretty. It's a fantastic.
Listen, we're always telling women that you have to ask for what you want.
Exactly.
Worst thing they can do is say no or vote you out,
or not, because see, it seems to be working in her favor.
I love her so much.
And I just love that this episode was all about Dan and Angelina tearing each other apart in confessionals. And then who are the two to work together at the very end? It's really a marriage of convenience.
Right.
I love Angelina, especially at tribal council, because she like, does this, and I don't know if it's, like, good for her game or not, but she literally calls out everything. Like, last Tribal Council, she was like, Gabby, you're only doing this because you're on the bottom and you're doing it out of desperation. And she did the same thing with Christian this episode. So she is totally, like, seeing through the guise of them. Again, I don't know if it's going to work out well for her, but her at Tribal Council, you know, I as I was saddened to lose John Hennigan, if I had to lose Christian, Angelina, or John, give me John any day of the week, because those other two are just, I want to see as much of them as possible.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and so this is what I mean by, like, I sometimes am thinking, like, what is the edit doing? Like, what is the storytelling? Just because the last couple seasons, I haven't really been able to, like, trust that the editors know what they're doing, because, like, HHH, I was like, okay, Ben can't just win, right? Like, that can't happen. That would be such a bad story. And then it did happen. So, like, this season, or this episode, it was like, okay, what is all of this Dan and Angelina stuff, only to come down to them being the last two in the immunity challenge and Dan winning? Like, that's a terrible story. Like, why are they doing this? And then the Tribal Council totally tied it all together and restored my faith in the storytelling of this season, which is something that I haven't been able to have for the last couple seasons. So well, now I can go into the episode feeling like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, actually, let me do my read for Dan, and then I can explain a little bit of how I think about him. So first of all, too bad there's no Weight Watchers for your ego, because that's what Dan needs. Also, the reality show he should have been on was The Biggest Loser, but I guess he can still be the biggest loser when he gets zero votes in the final three, because that's where I think he's headed. I think his edit screams losing finalist.
I completely agree, Liana, and I have been saying this for weeks and people have doubted me. I think that he is completely a losing finalist.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I loved his, like, complex personality edit of, like, yeah, I was a David who lost weight, and now I'm a Goliath, and now it's like, where you at, bro? I'm gonna carry these three bags over my head, bro. And then, like,
and lose the challenge, bro.
Yeah, see? Huh.
Yeah, it is interesting, because I would say that, I mean, preseason, people were super positive on him. Episode one, he sort of sullies that reputation with all the stuff he's doing, but everyone's like, okay, he has two idols. I don't know if I'd go so far to say losing finalists. I'm surprised he would even make it that far, just because I think that he is such a big threat at this point that even if he expends his other idol, like, he's going to have to thread through a bunch of tight needles in order to make his way to the end. But it is pretty staggering, especially this episode, which was pretty heavy on the Dan negativity content, considering, like, from where we were in the middle end of September to where we are in the middle of November. It's pretty staggering.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know. I just get this feeling with his little tantrums. Like, the one read I had written for Kara was just about, you know, I know she's not a mother, but if she ever wants to have children, she already has a lot of experience taking care of crybaby tantrum throwing Dan. Like, I just sort of feel like that personality is gonna lead people to maybe keep him around, because they, like, he's just a little off. He's just off putting, I think, in some way, which could be something we're not seeing, but I don't know.
Interesting. Lita, what do you think about that?
Guys, I hate Dan. I just can't.
Do your reads, girl. Do your reads.
Okay. Channel it.
Dan, you mocked Angelina for talking about the military having not served herself when the only thing you're a veteran of is two tours of the first grade because you're a moron. And no, eating a tub of Americone Dream back in the days of old Dan does not count as serving your country.
Yes. Get served in that drive-thru.
Damn, you served it right there.
I can't stand him. And just, like, the audacity to talk about, like, Angelina not knowing anything about the military because she hasn't served when her husband has. And, like, being a military spouse is, like, such a demanding thing. Like, oh my God, it really got to me.
Yeah, but Dan's on a SWAT team, so. You know.
Oh, right. Sorry, I forgot. Thank you for your service.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, so here's a read I had to bring it back to John. Oh, I'm sad he's gone. All right. Well, actually, I had a hard time writing a read for John because he is handsome, athletic, intelligent, approachable, has a sense of humor about himself. There's literally nothing wrong with him. But then I remembered he chose Dan as his closest ally. Boy, bye.
Like that was like a yeah, that was like a Dan and Don and John's clothing when it came to the read.
Danceled.
Boom.
Oh boy, I hope so. If Natalie was still in the game, that would absolutely be the vote. If she cast a vote against Dan, she would absolutely say that he was danceled.
Yeah,
but his
love your beard though, darling. Yeah. All right, Lita, let's go back to you.
Okay, let's go to Christian. This is kind of an obvious one, but Christian, people call you Big Bang Theory, which is a perfect nickname because I can't understand how you got on TV in the first place, let alone how you've managed to go on for this long while being this insufferable.
There's actually going to be a spinoff called Young Christian about him as a child.
Oh my God. Could you imagine, like, this ball utilizes gravity in order to make for a sufficient playtime.
I love child Christian voice. It's beautiful. Him solving puzzles. Okay, well, actually, all right, I'll do Christian's also. So I know a lot of viewers this season want to bang the Big Bang Theory, but just a warning, I hear Christian writes algorithms to finish quickly.
Wait, is Christian some sort of sex symbol?
Yeah.
Ew. I mean, cool. Yeah. Sorry.
No, there have been a legitimate good number of social media posts I've seen in the past 8 weeks. I was like, am I weird for finding Christian sexy?
See? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was actually applying to be the comptroller of Slamtown.
Oh my God.
Hey!
More balloons are falling from the ceiling. What's going on?
Every time Liana makes a sexual innuendo, balloons.
Yeah, I don't know where the balloons are coming from.
I know her
stamina is endless.
Balloons.
Oh my goodness, Lita, do you have another one?
Yeah, I've got one for Gabby.
Ooh, let's stick on the glasses connection to go with Gabby.
Okay, so I absolutely adore Gabby. She lives in DC and she's my friend. So this is not out of any bad place. just a disclaimer. Gabby,
it's a medium place.
Yes. Gabby, people say a lot of things about you, that you cry too much, that you look like E.T., that you look like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, that you're a nerd, that you're a bad Survivor player. But those people are wrong. I don't think you're a bad Survivor player.
Wait, maybe I've been reading too much into the Christian is sexy post and not enough into the Gabby looks like E.T. post.
So Gabby went as E.T. for Halloween this year because people tell her that she looks like E.T.
That's insane.
Gabby, phone home.
Yeah. Well, you guys are playing for Reese's Pieces and Gabby just like goes crazy.
Aww. I want to see Gabby like in the little blanket sitting in the basket of a bike.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe when she was like, maybe she was huddled, you know, in a blanket during the worst storms, like that garnered the E.T. imagery.
A lot more people have made the Gollum comparison.
Yeah, well, that's what people, it's like sort of when people were comparing Debbie to like Samara from The Ring. Like there's something about having your hair down long and parted in the middle sometimes on Survivor that like garners that imagery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, mine for Gabby. Okay. So good on Gabby for noticing the clue at the merge feast, but it was a pity she couldn't see through her tears to see the actual advantage.
Aww.
She needs more Kleenex than Christian. Boom, balloons.
No, God, my room's being buried in balloons at this point. It's more balloon than floor right now. Did you see this is what Edwin alluded to on the poem, but Davey and Nick had a nickname. It's pretty, it's not that creative, but it's still fun, and it's understandable why it didn't make the air.
Yeah, don't say it or there's going to be more balloons.
Okay, I'll say it. So, Davey and Nick, portmanteaued, formed the Dick Alliance. And what was great is that Davey's Instagram post, which, by the way, Davey's Instagram handle is at I Hate Davey, which is lovely. But it was, last night, the dicks were erect, ladies.
Oh, my God.
Large and in charge.
And they wrecked the Goliath.
Yeah, they ran train on the Goliaths.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was actually going to be my discussion question, but I wasn't sure exactly what the discussion would be. Just that that's a thing that happened and everyone needed to know.
Yeah, we have another discussion on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. A discussion. Okay. Well, I don't have any more reads because I'm out of
one for Nick. Or was it the dicks generally being an alliance name is a read?
Yes, exactly. It's a read of Davey more than Nick. Yeah. For Carl, so I was trying to write one for Carl, but all I had written was hat, question mark.
Carl, hat, choices.
Choices. Coconut choices.
Hat, question mark.
Yeah, that was the extent of my creativity for Carl.
That's also the extent of his Survivor game.
Oh my gosh. So at Tribal Council, when it was before it cut to Carl, just all of a sudden Carl's voice started, you could hear his voice. I think the camera was on Davey where he was saying, like, you know, I don't believe it one bit, Jeff. I was like, who is this person? And then it cut to Carl. I was like, oh, Carl. Yes. Okay.
I love that they had to somehow explain how he got in on Nick and Davey finding the advantage. So instead of him telling it, it's just Davey being like, so Nick and I found this clue. And then my boy Carl rolls up.
And then Carl,
he's included. Right. Carl is here.
Yeah, there, it's actually talking with John. There's this weird perception of Carl going on. Where, like you said, I don't really have much of an impression of him, considering that now Elizabeth's gone. And that's really what a lot of his storyline was based off of. But it seems like Carl is coming across as very weaselly. He talked in a secret scene this week about the fact that, like, he likes to observe everything from afar. And it seems like people are not only noticing that, but it's rubbing off poorly on the others. So I know it was a question last week about, like, okay, what's the David pecking order? And it might be a bit more shaken up this week, considering that now they have the vote steal. But you'd have to imagine that Carl actually might be going sooner rather than later, just because I don't know if any Goliaths want to work with them at this rate.
That's so interesting, because, I mean, obviously my perception of Carl is he's there, but I don't have a negative opinion of him. But it's interesting that that's sort of how he's coming across, because obviously we're not seeing it. But but I mean, I guess it's kind of, you know, when Mike White was like, what do you think, Carl and Davey are going to, you know, lead the rebellion or something? Davey and did, again, Carl
and
the one.
Yeah, again, a really nice piece of storytelling there of, like, Carl and Davey, they won't mount an insurrection. And Look what Davey did.
Dun-dun, large and in charge. Okay. All right. I'll move past the dicks.
Yeah, let's close the library on the dick.
Okay. All right. Actually, okay, I just want to jump in to our next segment, because I'm so excited for this. So this is an idea that was brought to us by Corey, who his three-year-old suddenly decided that he loves Survivor. And so he told him Survivor bedtime stories. So I thought we could write some Survivor bedtime stories here on the B&B. So we're going to do this in the form of Mad Libs, and then we'll sort of see how this plays out. I have two stories in two different forms. I have no idea how this is going to work, but I'm excited. So what we're going to do is we'll go back and forth, Mike and Lita, between the two of you, having you fill in these things for Mad Libs, and then we'll read the story and see how it goes. So, Mike, we'll start with you. We need a female Survivor player.
Oh, okay. Give me Purple Kelly.
Okay. Lita, a Survivor filming location.
I'm trying to think if any of them are particularly funny, but I don't think they are. We'll go San Juan del Sur.
Okay. A food from the gross eating challenge.
Let's go with the old standard of Balut.
Classic. All right, Lita, Survivor Alliance name.
Oh my God, there's so few. The Four Horsemen.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say Nick pretty much is ballooning the number of named alliances on Survivor.
Yeah, the chart is just like a line until the season. Yeah.
Okay, Mike, a Survivor player.
Any Survivor player?
Any Survivor player.
Michael Kelly again.
Let's go with Jay Byers.
Okay. Lita, a Survivor player?
Helen Glover.
Okay. Mike, a Survivor player?
Let's go more recent. Let's go with Chris Noble.
Okay. And last thing we need, Lita, a Jeff Probstism. So something Jeff Probst might say.
Dig, woman.
Nice.
What do you think Mike White would say back to Jeff when he says dig, woman?
Dig, man.
No, you dig.
Worth digging for. Okay. All right. Perfect. So this is actually going to fill out our first story. So I am going to...
I hope I don't get too sleepy from this story.
Oh, that's right. You might
fall asleep on this bed of balloons around me.
Fall right asleep. The balloons are very comfortable. Alrighty. So let me just fill in some of these blanks here. Just killing some time. Do, 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 do. This is going to be great. All right. So let's do this. All right. Once upon a time, there was a little girl named Purple Kelly. One day, she was walking along the San Juan del Sur beach, and pretty soon she came upon an empty shelter. Inside, she noticed there were three bowls of balut, and Purple Kelly was hungry. She tasted the balut from the first bowl. "This balut is too hot," she exclaimed. So she tasted the balut from the second bowl. "This balut is too cold," she said. So she tasted hot the balut, the last bowl of balut. "Ah, this balut is just right," she said happily, and she ate it all up. Purple Kelly was very tired, so she lay down on the bamboo shelter. But one side of the shelter, the bamboo was too round. On the other side, it was too flat. But in the middle, it was just right, and she fell asleep.
This is a weird shelter if it's round on one side and flat on the other.
Elizabeth was in the middle of making the shelter.
It got dark.
Okay. Yeah, it got dark. Okay, you can't finish the project.
Yes, it's not a full, it's not a half-day job.
Yeah, it's not a half-day job. Okay, but little did Purple Kelly know, this was the shelter of the 3-4 horsemen. and they were.
Well, that's very. It's a very confusing name. It's like the 3/4 horsemen.
But they were just coming home from tribal council. "Someone's been eating my balut," growled the Papa J. Byers. "Someone's been eating my balut," said the Mama Helen Glover.
"Aw.
Someone's been eating my balut, and they ate it all up," cried the baby Chris Noble. Papa J. Byers growled, "Someone's been sleeping on my bamboo." "Someone's been sleeping on my bamboo, too," said Mama Helen Glover. "Someone's been sleeping on my bamboo, and she's still there," exclaimed baby Chris Noble. Just then, Purple Kelly woke up and saw the 3-4 horsemen. She screamed, "Dig, woman!" And she jumped up and ran out of the shelter. Purple Kelly ran past the fire pit, down the beach, and never returned to the shelter of the 3-4 horsemen again.
This is... already incredible. First off, I need to give you major kudos for your voice, Berkeley, on that.
Yes.
Never would I have thought a Chris Noble impression could be done with a palate lisp, but here we are.
He's a baby. It's baby Chris Noble.
Yeah, so he was on his way back from speech therapy.
I'm a baby. And she ate it all up.
Oh, God. I agree with Lena. Hot balut sounds disgusting.
Hot balut, cold balut, and the last balut was just right.
Which means completely wrong, because it's balut.
Exactly. I don't know. I like that she was excited. Purple Kelly was hungry, and balut was what drew her into the shelter.
I'm surprised she didn't quit after running away from the 3-4 horsemen.
Yeah, seriously. The 3-4 horsemen. It's like, well, I'll just keep the 3-4 horsemen. I think I'm not gonna cut it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we had a fourth, but we ate them, so it's now just the 3-4 horsemen.
They voted them out at tribal, which is what they were coming back from, so you know, obviously it makes sense.
Also, I think some people would call Jay Byers daddy, so Papa Bear makes sense.
Well, Papa Bear should have been the right answer to that. That fill in the blank.
Papa Bear. I love that little family of Chris Noble, Helen Glover, and Jay Byers. Name a more iconic trio. Oh, wait. Yeah,
we'll be waiting a long time. All right. So that story obviously was based off of Goldilocks and the 3-4 Bears. this next one we're going to do, I wrote myself. So,
Yes, a Boris original.
Yeah, so we're going to see how this works out. Okay, so Mike, we'll start with you, a female Survivor player.
Let's go this season and say Elizabeth.
Okay, Lita, an adjective.
Homosexually. No, homosexual is an adjective. Come on, English lessons.
Let's go. All right, Mike, a Survivor filming location.
Let's go with Gabon.
Gabon. Okay. Lita, a verb ending in ing.
So a gerund. Yes. Got it. Okay. Sorry.
We don't take Kylie to your fancy words around here.
A regular word, a verb ending in ing.
Okay. Slinging.
Okay. Mike, a sea creature / animal on Survivor.
Sir Squiddington.
Yeah, I was gonna say I gotta satiate my brand here.
Okay. Sir Squiddington. Lita, a Survivor player.
We'll do oh my god, I can't even remember his name. Matthew von Ertfelde.
Okay. Let's see. Mike, an adjective?
Bumpy.
Okay. Lita, a mythical creature?
A Thestral.
A Survivor player, Mike.
Let's go with Rupert.
Aww.
Also, great Rupert impression with Jay Byers' Papa Bear. Yeah.
I know. I might have to bring it back for this. Okay.
This is a bear, said Papa Bear.
Said Papa so Bear's Papa Bear. Dreams
of eating a hot balloon.
Much for my dreams. All right. Survivor advantage.
Vote stealer.
All right. Mike, another magical creature.
Let's go with a chimera.
Wait, what was the... Christmas thing?
Krampus.
Oh, Krampus. Yeah,
all right,
he's real.
He's real.
I'll change my Thestral to Krampus. Can I do that?
Yeah, sure. That's allowed. We can change these
substitution.
Yeah. Of course. This is what we wanted to be, gang. All right. I don't remember who's next, but Survivor player.
I think it's me. We'll go with Chelsea from Ghost Island.
Okay.
It's gotta be Little Miss Muffet because she knows how to sit.
That's right. I'm sitting. Queen. We stand a sitting queen. Alrighty. Crap. Where was I? Adjective, Mike.
Let's go with fluid.
And Lita, a household item.
Why was my first thought Ouija board? That's not...
You know, you have internet for that. Your house is not complete without a Ouija board.
Got it.
Is that what you're putting?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Mike, a dwelling.
A dwelling? let's go with a log cabin.
Okay.
like Graceland.
Yeah, it could be a proper dwelling.
To give like house hunters, like we're looking for Graceland. So we need somewhere to fit our Ouija board.
Okay. Body part.
Lita. The appendix.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Mike, a noun.
Bicycle.
All right. Lita, a Survivor challenge.
I don't know what the names of them are. What's the one where your hands are tied behind your back and you do the worm?
Survivor Sandworm Challenge?
Yep, perfect.
All right.
Yep, and 2 weeks after Halloween, we're going with the Beetlejuice reference.
Right. All right, Mike, a number.
73.
All right, we're getting there. Lita, a noun?
Why am I so bad at this?
First place or thing. Okay, so what was it? It was
perfume.
All right, Mike, a verb ending in ed.
Placed.
And lastly, Lita, a noun.
Oh God, my enemy.
I know.
A giraffe.
Yes, if only these were gerunds, this would be your bread and butter, which are also nouns.
Giraffe.
Okay. All right, I'm gonna need a minute to plug some stuff in. So
I'll get something going.
Great.
So this was actually, this isn't my discussion question, but our head writer Paul Osselson asked this, and Lita, I'd like to get your opinion since you're very fashion focused. I know that Nick said that the idol clue would actually look really good on a t-shirt. Do you think that there are, you know, is there a business for, outside of being Johnny Fairplay, for like finding Survivor phrases or moments and putting them onto t-shirts to sell?
Like, is there a specific business that makes Survivor t-shirts?
No, I think, do you think there's a market for it? Because I do think that the idol clue, like, to Nick's point, I think it actually does, graphically speaking, look like it could fit in on some sort of, like, West Coast t-shirt.
Yeah, I guess there is a market for it. I wonder if there's a copyright issue.
I guess that's true, though. I guess, like, yeah, I wonder if, is it, like, intellectual property what they draw up for challenges and for clues?
I don't know. I mean, the RHAP t-shirt is pretty cool. That they made with that logo or whatever
True. Well, I wonder if you could, like, remember in Triple H how, like, the really vague, like, two boxes carved onto the tree to represent, like, the under the raft, like, maybe you could do something with that. Like, maybe if it's super vague, it won't be too bad, but I feel like there is enough creativity out there and there are enough, like, vague symbols going on in the Survivor universe that there could be a market for building a variety of apparel around it.
Listen, you're gonna give me a shirt with a Survivor box on it, it better be the neutral box.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, I don't know how you would it be, like, three boxes and, like, one of the middle ones, like, highlighted in a golden glow or something.
Oh, neutral.
Yes, I don't know how to, or else you put, like, the Swedish symbol on it. I don't know how exactly you make it neutral, or the Swiss symbol. The Swiss symbol, I should say.
Yes, I don't know. I would buy a t-shirt that just says neutral box on it.
I think you would get a corner a lot of questions if you walked around with a shirt that says neutral box printed all over it.
Oh my gosh, wait, I actually had some ideas for this, because I think you could do, like, everybody could do sort of their catchphrases. So, you know, for, like, Devin, it could be, this is not an advantage. Another one I had was Dave Ball, making love is my sport. For one for Ryan, it could be, it's in my, and then there's, like, an arrow pointing to his pants, you know, like the I'm with stupid t-shirt, but it's, like, down to his pants. I think there's a real market here.
Chelsea, I'm sitting.
I'm sitting, exactly. Like, I pay money for those. All right. So let's read our story that we've created here together. All right. I'll just get started. Once upon a time, because that's how all stories start, there was a princess named Elizabeth. She was the most homosexual princess in all of Gabon. And one day, Princess Elizabeth went slinging in the Gabonian jungle with her best friend, a talking Sir Squiddington named Matthew von Erdfelde. Then, out of the jungle.
Wait. Can we change his name to Matthew von Squirtfelde?
Okay. Matthew von Squirt.
Ew, that's like a foreign name.
Yep. Oh, why are the balloons are coming down? I didn't mean it.
Hooray! Okay, all right. Then, out of the jungle, a bumpy Krampus named Rupert approached them. He demanded, bring me the vote stealer, which was stolen from me by the evil Chimera, Chelsea, from Ghost Island.
I love that you need the clarifier in there as well.
Yeah, if you do not return it to me, I will turn your best friend, Matthew Sir Squirt von Squirt, into a fluid Ouija board. ow. All right. Princess Elizabeth and Matthew von Squirtfelta headed out to the log cabin of Chelsea from Ghost Island to take back the vote steal.
Well, this is very Lost, like Jacob's cabin. Yes.
Their appendix hurt, but they continued on their quest until the smell of bicycle was in the air, and they knew that Chelsea from Ghost Island was close. To get the vote steal back from me, you must beat me in the Survivor Sandworm Challenge.
Well, I understand why Chelsea didn't talk that much in Ghost Island.
Anyway, Jeff Probst was standing by, and the Princess Elizabeth and Chelsea from Ghost Island took their spots. After 73 hours, they are both steady as a perfume, Jeff Probst exclaimed. Suddenly, Chelsea from Ghost Island dropped out of the challenge. I'm vanquished! She yelled, victorious. Princess Elizabeth and Matthew von Schwarzfelder placed all the way home to deliver the vote steal to Rupert the Bumpy Krampus. In the end, Princess Elizabeth learned the true meaning of friendship. Giraffe. They lived happily ever after. The end.
Oh my God.
The Bumpy Krampus.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the perfect holiday song. Yeah. Had a very shiny beard. Oh my God. I know I would have liked to see, no offense to Matthew von Squirtfelder, but I think he would have made a pretty fluid Ouija board.
Pretty fluid Ouija board. Yep. Yep.
Oh my God, could you imagine taking place in that sandworm challenge for 3 days?
Yeah. 73 hours.
It's just like they can't figure out how to move. Something pops out by just quitting.
Well, Jeff Probst did say they were both steady as a perfume. So
point of the Survivor Sandworm Challenge.
Right. And then somehow she dropped out of the challenge.
It sounds like an internet trend. Right. Everybody do the
sandworm challenge. Everyone tie your hands and feet behind your back and do the sandworm challenge.
It's better than the Tide Pod challenge, so I'll take it.
Oh my God, that was a brilliant story. Though I am surprised that Elizabeth would not be featured in The Princess and the Pea, considering her sleeping conditions.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, she really should have been, you know, if you think about it, like in the first story, instead of Purple Kelly, it should have been Elizabeth trying to find the right bamboo. But I think
half of it was round and half of it was flat.
I know. Middle was just right. Although I feel like sleeping on half round bamboo, half flat bamboo is worse.
Yeah, it's like the worst of both possible worlds.
I don't know. Sorry, I still can't get the Bumpy Krampus, Rupert, the Bumpy Krampus song out of my head. So
maybe we'll have to get we'll get a slam poem about that next week. Yeah, we've confused so many people with a lizard bit the past couple of podcasts on the main RHAP feed. So if someone could please produce Rupert the Bumpy Krampus in the next like few hours, that'd be great.
All right. Well,
that was nothing short of incredible. I am so happy that we have created. Poor Corey, I don't think your kid will be sleeping for months now if you read those stories to them.
We got to copyright this quick and start writing those books. I think we've got some coin to make here, along with our t-shirt ideas.
Printing the entire story on a t-shirt.
Right.
I think that'd be perfect. That'll be like the uniform of our sovereign nation.
Yes, right. Those are the stories. Those are the tales that we read the children at night in our sovereign nation.
All right. Well, I want to move on to a question here that I believe was asked by Audrey Radajak on Twitter, I believe. So I'm going to co-opt it here. So we found out after the fact that it seems like the Davids were in on the entire plan to split the votes. They knew that Davy had the idol. So it wasn't a big of a shock as we thought initially that nobody knew about the idol. But of the three people who I think were, you know, put up the biggest acting jobs at this tribal council between Nick, Davy and Christian, I want to power rank their performances and we'll give them each an award. So we'll give one of them the Emmy, we'll give one of them the Golden Globe, and we'll give one of them the People's Choice Awards. And I think those speak for themselves in terms of power rankings.
I love the Golden Globes.
Well, Mike, classic millennial move, giving everybody gets a trophy. But you get your milk delivered by drone too.
God. Listen, award shows get to be so predictable. I wanna make it as unpredictable as this tribal was.
Yeah, okay. All right, Mike.
So I guess we're power ranking basically between Nick, Davy, and Christian. Looking back in retrospect, who had the best acting job out of the three?
Ooh, well, to me, Nick always makes the same face of like his mouth slightly agape and his eyes wide. And he just sort of makes that face throughout most tribal councils. And that didn't really change here. Although I'm not going to lie, I did really like his line of what happens now after all of the Christian and Angelina votes were read. Like he didn't know what was happening. I thought that was pretty good. My personal favorite, though, probably has to be Christian. I genuinely believe that he might not have known, which is why I wanted to see the votes, because I was like, oh, they left Gabby and Christian out and they voted for Angelina while Carl, Davy and Christian, Nick all voted together for John. So I got to give the top award to Christian here.
What do you think, Lita?
Yeah, so I'm going to give the top award to Davy, because he's the only one that I'm completely certain was actually acting. Because, like, seriously.
But the other two could be so method.
Yeah, but it's completely, I mean, that is just, Nick has, like, resting what face?
Yeah.
And, yes. Yeah. And Christian very possibly actually didn't know what was going on. Or, like, even if he was in on the plan, he wasn't sure that that plan was real or that it was going to happen. Like, he was still obviously in a position where he would have been nervous about going home regardless. So, yeah, I think that Davey gets the best actor.
I feel super confident that Christian was acting is because he voted for John. And I feel like, you know, Davey could have gone to him and said, okay, look, just vote for John. Just trust me. But I really feel like Davey would have told Christian at that point. So I do think Christian was acting again. Nick with the resting face, that one is still up for grabs.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me because Christian's performance at Tribal Council before the votes was interesting as well, in that it seemed like what I gleaned was that he was trying to fish information out of the Goliath, specifically Angelina, to mention his name. Like, when they were talking about getting rid of threats, you know, she was saying, like, oh, yeah, there are a lot of threats out there. And Christian's like, but did you specifically mention me? And she sort of calls him out, like, you are trying to mitigate your threat level right now. And maybe it was just so Christian could get everything out there to cement the idol play. But I mean, if he knew, he probably knew there was a chance he was going, but he was definitely playing up that victim card greatly at Tribal Council, maybe to just throw the Goliaths off the scent of, you know, oh, you know, Alec told Nick that Christian's going, so I'm assuming Nick told Christian, and so Christian's just trying to grasp for straws, even though those straws are quite firm.
Firm straws. That's what everyone likes to talk about. I'm trying to think about, I mean, Davey, okay, wait. So just good to go back to the ranking. So I think Nick gets the worst award. Sorry, mm-hmm. Nick. I thought Davey was fun. I mean, obviously you want rewatching the episode, you know, knowing what's going to happen. Like, he, it was fun when Dan goes up to play the idol and Davey sort of like, oh man, I knew it. And sort of, you know, played into this, oh crap, we both played idols, you know, what's going to happen? So I enjoyed that. So if I had to rank, I think I'd probably go Christian, Davey, Nick. But I think Christian for me is the runaway winner.
See, I would give it to Davey personally, just alone with his little throat clear before he got up to play the vote. And I don't know if it was, you know, him experiencing some Alita-esque laryngitis or him trying to be like, ahem, everyone look at me. But I think that little gestus alone might give him my vote.
Also, I like this idea of managing your threat level. For some reason, that reminds me, not to go back to The Office, but of threat level midnight.
Threat level midnight, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how those things might coexist somehow, but in my brain they do.
And I do not know how Agent Michael Skarn would do. Probably not too well, but maybe that's a brand steal for another day. Well, let's move on to the final segment of each and every week here on the B&B, the question of the week. Last week's question of the week, in honor of Dan's little motivational speech that he gave himself during the immunity challenge, what pep talk would you give yourself if you were playing on Survivor and in the midst of a 73-hour sandworm challenge? As per usual, we'll go through some responses from the listeners, and then we'll go around the horn as well and give our own responses. Let's start with Parker Schimler, who says, I would sing DJ Khaled songs to myself.
DJ Khaled!
Another advantage.
I don't know if you could do that quietly, though, because that's the thing. Like, Dan's was super under the radar. Like, you can't whisper DJ Khaled. It doesn't feel right.
Do you think DJ Khaled whispers DJ Khaled to himself when he's trying to pump himself up? Like, DJ Khaled. Yeah.
Like, as a reminder of who you are.
Yeah.
Dan Sinensky says, I've had one in mind for a long time for endurance challenges. Quote, the worse I feel, the worse they feel. The worse they feel, the better I feel. It will also be my pep talk for hunger, bad weather, and other misery. All game, nothing personal.
Sounds familiar.
I actually like this, though. I feel like it's a nice way to sort of turn the logic back on yourself.
Plus, there's nothing better than the misery of others to make yourself feel good. So, you know, really feed on that.
Yeah, Schadenfreude. The Melissa bot says, my pep talk would be a combination of Tony's llama noise, blah, 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 and Sandra's motto, I try to make that an onomatopoeia. The queen stays queen. The queen stays queen. Adios. Also, shout out to Human Lita, hashtag girl power.
Hashtag girl power. Just say that to yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I think we go back to the, can you whisper it to yourself? The Tony's llama noises might be more difficult. The Sandra one, probably a little bit easier to do.
Mike, please whisper llama noises now so I can hear this.
Balloons!
That sounded like the Krampus noise.
No. Who the heck stole my vote steal?
Okay, Mike, and when we perform our bedtime story live, you can take over the role of Bumpy Krampus Rupert, and the noises, I think, will make a really good, you know, really good part of the storytelling.
As long as you play Witch Chelsea, I am there for it.
Got it.
John Tinkham says, Witch Chelsea from Ghost Island. Right. John Tinkham says, my survivor pep talk would be motivating myself by aggressively stating facts from Skinny Ryan's CBS bio. Born in Tennessee, worked in a grocery store. Enjoys writing his own punk rock music. Has 5 dogs, including one that is 3-legged.
That was a better Jeff Probst impression than mine. Like, that sounds like something Jeff Probst would be yelling during a challenge.
Die, jerks.
Yeah, exactly. Skinny Ryan just, what a weird bio for a weird man.
He worked in a grocery store, I think is my personal favorite.
I'm very surprised I was not able to find some Skinny Ryan punk rock music to do on our music game last week, if that is really true.
Loss.
Now it makes sense why he painted the skull on his bandana for the Outcast. Yeah. That's just like how he lives naturally. Yeah. He was the Billy Garcia before Billy Garcia.
Skinny Ryan, when I think of like a hardcore person, yes, he's definitely the first person that comes to mind for me.
Yes, hands down. Ugh, we stan a punk rock music legend.
John, and get the balloons ready here, Liana.
Oh.
My pep talk is similar to Caitlin from Big Brother, who called herself a little girl with a big bleep by calling myself a little guy with a big bleep.
Oh, no.
Did he write bleep?
Yep.
Yeah, at least he's self-censored.
I'm running this verbatim. That's why I went with the horrific llama noises. Could you imagine, though, like, sitting there and just hearing someone being like, oh yeah, you're huge. You're so
God, I'm sure that was Dan's other pep talk that was cut.
Oh man, as long as Davey and Nick, maybe that could be their like pump up team speech or something when they're like in the huddle right before. They're like, we got this 5-piece puzzle. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Steve Bond says, my motivational speech to myself would be very self-deprecating, including, don't F this up. What were you thinking? Don't do that again. What the F were you thinking? And wahoo, you didn't mess that one up.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
So it's a demotivational speech.
Exactly.
E.E. Melly says, instead of giving myself a pep talk, I'd start saying Eminem's Lose Yourself lyrics to myself. Like, palms are sweaty, bees knees weak, arms are heavy, and mom's spaghetti.
I'm glad that B, you know, for her brief stint on the season, has been able to make
sense.
Brief stint on the season has been able to make such a big impact.
Big impact. Oh my goodness. I'm going to read this one from Jonathan Troyer as well to finish things off, because I don't know if it's a motivational quote, but he's quoting Kronk's new groove with what am I gonna do? I know, I'll tunnel out of here with a spoon, escape through the sewers, and live as a quiet but lonely shepherdess named Maria. That'll work. We're out of spoons. That's it. I'm done for. And chin up, big guy. I don't know if that's the answer to the question, but I thought I'd read it because it was tagged RHAPBNB.
I think it is. That's like a motivational speech. Plus, if anybody's going to motivate you, Kronk is a pretty good person.
Or Angel Kronk.
Angel Kronk. a shepherdess named Maria. You could probably still do it without, even though you didn't have spoons. You could just dig with your hands.
Yeah, dig, Kronk.
Chin up, big guy.
We all know how I feel about Patrick Warburton on this podcast, that he's off-brand John Hamm.
Well, let's move on here. Liana, what is your motivational speech? It sounds like, did you go in the direction of Steve in terms of just being very self-deprecating?
I was. Sometimes I walk really quickly at work and I like turn corners too quickly and run into stuff. You're like, God damn it, Liana. So that's something I will say to myself. But no, instead, I actually went with something more along the lines of the lyrics, like reciting song lyrics to yourself. And the song that really popped into my head was Fergalicious. If you can make up a word about yourself, like that's pretty good, right? I mean, you have to be pretty self-assured to say Fergalicious is a word. So I don't know if Liana Licious is the word I want to go with, but I could just be like doing so. I'd be like, I'm Liana Licious.
So just to clarify the logic on this one,
yes.
To break it down here,
right.
The most confident thing you can do is create a term using your own name.
Yes. That's what I would put. Number one with a bullet. The most confident people make up words using their own name. And Liana, that's how I would pump myself up.
I really don't want you to be intimidated by how confident I am, but my Snapchat username is Leetastic.
See? See, Mike? Am I wrong?
I guess not. I mean, I have been dealing with a lot of, you know, self-esteem issues, but I guess since full bloom is a term, I guess I'm more confident in myself than I thought.
Yes. Or, you know, because my creativity knows no bounds. So how about Mike-alicious? Which is, I'm sure, a
word. You're famous fluent Mike.
Yeah.
That's true. Oh, goodness. All right. I like this. Well, Leetalicious, Leetastic. How Leetastic is your motivational speech?
It's incredibly Leetastic. So I would go with an old standby with some substitutions to make it survivor relevant. This is the thing that gets me the most pumped up. I don't have an immunity idol. I have never had an immunity idol. If I wanted an immunity idol, yes, I could probably go out and get one because I am what? Sickening. You could never have a hidden immunity idol because you are not that kind of girl. Baby, every alliance I have worked for and I've gotten myself. I built myself from the ground up, you effing bee.
And then you throw your rice in their face.
Yeah, right. I throw water from my canteen.
Ugh, iconic. The Nancy Drew of Survivor. Come through.
Oh my God. So I also sort of like cribbed from other motivational speeches. One was the last part of Bill Pullman's speech from Independence Day. Namely, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. I took out a lot of the alien stuff because that didn't seem very pertinent.
Unless you're playing with Gabby.
Yeah, it's true. You must vanquish the extraterrestrial that lives here. But I ended up using my main speech just pretty much verbatim from the movie Miracle on Ice from 2004. I believe it's Kurt Russell's speech.
Mm-hmm.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have tonight. That's what you've earned here tonight. One challenge. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this challenge. Not tonight. Tonight we skate with them. Tonight we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest survivor player in the world. You were born to be survivor players, every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired about hearing what a great survivor player everyone else is. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Is that like you to your multiple personalities? Every single one of you.
Yeah, it's the Kurt Russell part of my personality spoke up in this point in time.
That's pretty good. I did think about trying to do like, you know, classic movie speeches like Braveheart. But then I sort of ran into the multiple personality disorder issue, which I didn't know if I wanted to go with. But I think those are really great places to pull from.
Yeah, it's a very you stumbled upon Leetalicious. And I think that was the best treasure trove of all.
That's right.
So next week's question of the week, in honor of Davey's distraction plan of twirling a stick like a kendo warrior somehow working, if you were playing Survivor, what would be the perfect distraction in order to, you know, get everyone away from your allies searching for advantages? You have a bunch of ways you can reach out to us with your answer. You can always tweet it to us using hashtag RHAPBNB. You can post it on robhasawebsite.com as well as in the Rob Has Awesome Patrons group. You can post it on Reddit. You can email it to us at RHAPBNB@gmail.com. That's where you can also email us any game ideas you may have. And we will cull everything together and review it next week on a very special Thanksgiving episode where Akiva Whitaker will be joining us to break down everything from this Thanksgiving episode from Survivor. This season has already been an absolute feast. I can only imagine what the next course will be from here. But for now, Lita, thank you so much for coming on, for testing your knowledge of nouns, for reading these castaways to filth. It truly was a fantastic time.
Thank you so much for having me. I do apologize again about my voice. This can't be pleasant to listen to. But I am so honored to be following up with Jessica McKenna, who that is an amazing get, Mike. I'm a huge improv fan. So when I saw that she was on the B&B the week before me, I was like, pressure is on.
That's okay. You just gave yourself the Miracle on Ice speech right before you came on this podcast to really pump yourself up.
My favorite film.
Yes.
So, Lita, how can people follow you on social media? And is there anything you want to plug out there to the RHAP universe at large?
Yeah. So you can follow me on Instagram at Lita Grammed, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lita Tweeted.
And Snapchat at Lita Tastic.
It's Lita Tastic. It's just a regular portmanteau.
I'm not so fluent anymore.
I don't use Snapchat really anymore. You can send them to me and I'll open them like 6 days later. Don't send me nudes. So that's that. You can find my Survivor reviews on myentertainmentworld.ca. They're very, they're not like a recap where I talk about what happened on the episode. It's more like, today I want to talk about like my psychoanalysis of Dan and how he's an insecure loser. And I'll just kind of go on whatever topic I feel like. You can find those there. And also, as many of you know, I am from Squirrel Hill. The Tree of Life shooting was very, very close to me, both physically and to my heart. So I just want to put out a plug for there. There are still people who are recovering from that. Like, I know it's not in the news anymore because there's been a lot of other stuff since then. But you can still donate to the Jewish Federation of Greater Pittsburgh. You can donate to HIAS, or you can donate to the Squirrel Hill Food Pantry. And that would mean a lot to me and my community.
Absolutely. We'll be sure to put links to that in the show notes as well. And of course, our hearts go out to anyone who was affected by the tragedy at Tree of Life. Our thoughts are with you. Liana, how can people follow you on social media?
I'm on social media at Liana Boras, LianaBoras, doing, of course, all of the B&B stuff and then starting to get ready for RuPaul's Drag Race, which is going to be coming back with a holiday special and then All Stars season 4. So we are planning to get together to cover those at some point in the future.
Lita, real quick, since we made myriad Drag Race references over the course of this podcast, quick thoughts about the All Stars forecast?
I think it's amazing. I think that we really can't lose with this cast. I'm knocking on wood, and I will really regret this when our final three is Pheromone, Trinity Taylor, and I don't know, is there somebody else that I don't? Oh, and Valentina. I actually, to be clear, I don't have any issue with any of those three people. Those are just the three that I saw and it's like, oh, okay.
You just hate season 9, Lita. We get it.
I kind of do. Retrospectively, I liked it at the time, but I think that my anger over Shea Coulee not winning has grown with time. I think that every single other person on the cast, I deeply, deeply stan, and I'm sure I will. I mean, listen, Valentina is going to be Angel in Rent on Fox. So she could fully change my mind if she's iconic in that role.
Can't wait.
It's going to be fantastic. You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Check out the exit press I do every week on Parade. Had a really nice conversation with John Hennigan where he opened up a bit more about his thoughts about his own maybe strategic pros and cons. He talked about the personal revelations he had over the course of the game. He actually revealed that they almost named the Merge Tribe after the character he played in his new Netflix movie, which unfortunately got vetoed a la effing rain in Philippines, which is a damn shame, but understandable. So be sure to check that out. Also, speaking of Thestrals, the mythical creature that got cut from our second story, I got to go onto the Real Weird Sisters podcast to recap the Order of the Phoenix movie, which is one of my favorite of the Harry Potter films, but there's certainly a lot of stuff to poke fun at, and we had a really great time. That should be coming out probably in the next couple days or so on the Real Weird Sisters feed, so be sure to check all that out. that's going to do it for this week on the B&B. If you have any long-term suggestions for games, you can always reach out to us on Twitter like Corey did, or you can email us like Edwin did. Thank you to both of you and for everyone for listening to all this Molossian madness that went on over the past couple of hours. We'll be back next week with Akiva Winokur to break down episode 9 of Survivor David versus Goliath. Liana, Lita, thank you both so much. Thank you all for listening, and we'll check you out at your next day.
Hey everyone, this poem is very near and dear to my heart. It's titled Election Season. The votes are in. There's a new mayor in town. Can't touch Christian, so pass the crown. Idols were used in some electioneering. This Davy bandwagon has power steering. Nick and Davy, they call themselves dicks. Thick as gravy and twirling sticks. T-H-I-C-C. New Slammy Sosa, Davy, take the reins. At Ponderosa, John gets plenty of gains. He's been voted out, idol slammed. He can now pig out Russell Hammed. Your tribe might have a frickin' muckraker. Poor Goliaths, you're the victims of a rickin' backbreaker. Thank you for listening.